This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Morning, everybody. It is Wednesday. I'm saying that for Jennifer and Jamie's benefit, who seem to not know what the heck day it is today. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for November 2nd, episode 1557. And this episode is brought to you by our auditors. So good morning, horse world.
Happy anniversary, pour a cheerful toast and fill it, happy anniversary, but be careful you don't spill it, happy anniversary.
It's our anniversary. Well, yesterday was, but you weren't here, so today is officially our anniversary at Horses in the Morning. It's our birthday.
I can't believe that a job where my husband said, you've got a radio show about horses... What are you going to talk about after a week? Just finished its sixth year.
Every day.
That's for cray. 6 years. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And for our sponsors, we wouldn't be here without y'all. That's amazing. This is amazing.
It is amazing.
People that actually ask me, you still doing that
radio show thing?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Thanks for listening.
And you know, it's funny because we're doing the Year of the Listener on the Stablescoop show, and we had a listener we interviewed yesterday who just started with us 4 months ago and fell in love immediately, has been listening ever since, and she heard about us from Karen Chatton's Tuesday endurance episode.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. She's probably not listening to us. She just listens to Karen.
No, but... she listens every day now. She said her husband comes home and says, did you listen yet? Because he knows if she hasn't, she's going to be disappearing for an hour in the evening when he's there because she has to go listen.
Some people watch TV. Some people listen to our show.
That's
love
right. You know, we keep forgetting to, I keep forgetting that we have new listeners all the time. So welcome to our new listeners to the show. We would like to remind you that if you are a new listener, you have 1,557 episodes to catch up on. So
get to work.
What's wrong, you lazy bums?
Really, 1,556, because if they're listening right now, they're already listening to 1,557.
You're going to save yourselves an hour and a half.
There you go. We're super positive.
And, you know, I can remember you coming over to our house, this sweet little girl from Arizona coming over to our house and spending the week with us and before we even started. And then we kind of worked together to come up with a format for the show. It's changed over the years.
Feeling kind of fancy. I'm not going to lie. When I was flown across the country for my new job, and then little did I know, yeah, it wasn't that fancy.
We did not put her up at a posh hotel. She was in a spare bedroom with the cat.
With the cat that I was immensely allergic to.
But you were allergic to, and we didn't know.
We didn't know.
Like, I'm going to take a walk around the neighborhood just so I can breathe.
That was our first visit together. We did a photo shoot at the Kentucky Horse Park. Samantha Clark did it for us, and that was our first visit to the Kentucky Horse Park together. We did have fun that day. We were kind of like tourists.
I know, and we got to meet Cigar, so life was good. It was if you want to meet famous racehorses, just say you're doing a photo shoot. Excuse me. Yeah. Can you turn him around? Thanks. We're going to pet Cigar now. Great. Not get bitten. Okay, good. Here we go. Turn him around. Bring him to us. Okay. Thanks. And that's how we met Cigar.
I still get the question occasionally from new listeners. I know that the old timers have heard this story, but for new listeners, Jamie came to us. How she came to us was we put an ad on Facebook, and if you remember right, Jamie, that was the beginning of Facebook. It wasn't popular at all back then. It was just really starting.
6 years ago, it was pretty popular, but it was nowhere near
like
it is now.
No, it was nothing like that. And I think, do you remember what page we put it on? Was it?
Yes, because I, as an eventer, had thought they have an eventing radio show. And so I followed the link on that page, but I had actually never listened to an episode. And then on the eventing radio show page was where you posted you were looking for a host. And I was on my lunch break at my vet tech job where I'd been standing in the cold for like, or I'm sorry, in the heat, because it was summer, in the 115 degree days in the summer, standing up on my feet all day. And I was like, yeah, I need a new life.
We just posted this ad and it was very cryptic. It was just, we need a host. We didn't say what for.
You said call and leave a voicemail. We are looking for a host for a live daily internet radio show about horses.
That's what it was.
And just leave us a voicemail.
Yeah.
And so my voicemail was, hi, I'm Jamie Jennings. I have 10 plus years experience in radio and I'm currently a veterinary technician and just give me a call. And you know, your voicemail said, we will call you in 5 to 7 business days. And I hung up the phone and literally like an hour later, my phone rings.
Well, you were one of the, this is what happened. We had 82 calls. It was, right, Jennifer? It was like in the 80s. And Jennifer and I one night got out the wine and we sat there and we were going through all the voicemails. Well, most of them were like, delete, 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 delete. And it was getting frustrating. You must have called right before we actually did this project. We started listening to them all. And you were like the second to last one that we hit. And so we had literally listened to 80 voicemails by the time we got to you. And you were such a breath of fresh air in your voicemail.
Didn't you say that everybody was like, and then I have this horse, and he's gray.
There were some, and I apologize if you're listening, but there were some that went for minutes, like 4 or 5 minutes, just talking about their horses. and you know, it was just, we knew, you know, I know in co-hosts, I have a few of them now, there's 27 hosts on the network. I knew what I was looking for in a co-host. You know, I just knew as soon as I heard it, I would know it. And when I heard your voice, that was what, like, Jennifer's like, let's just call her now.
That's funny because my voicemail was clear and concise.
Yes.
Little did you know that was the last time I would ever be clear and concise.
And what was ironic, for those that have listened for a long time, Jamie was the only one that really didn't talk about herself in their voicemail.
And now that's, you're like, keep talking about yourself. That's what we pay you for.
It was kind of ironic, actually. But that's
just so
how,
behind,
that's
yeah.
how Jamie started. But we flew you out after that, right? It was after that.
Yeah, you hired, because then you made me do like a radio show, and all these little people behind the scenes had to vote on them. And I think you said like it was unanimous. Everybody picked me, and I was like, I never win contests. It's like I won a contest on the radio. So
we kind of had that was before auditors. We kind of had our core group of listeners that we sent it out to. There were like 15 of them. And there were 4 people that we did shows with that auditioned. And I think I knew that, you know, I was hoping that Horses in the Morning would become our number one show and would be very popular. And it is. It is our number one show now. And thanks to you. Thank you so much for...
I do. Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. But I do want to say that we had to book our own guests. That was kind of part of it. And I booked Todd Pletcher and Chris Cox. So.
And I lost the Todd Pletcher interview. I accidentally
I'm still mad
it.
About that, Glenn. Can't let that go.
It's still gone, I think. You know what I probably could find if I looked hard is your original voicemail to us.
Oh, dear God,
I think I could probably find that somewhere.
That'd be hilarious.
I wish I could find it. I got to look for that, actually, now that
if
I'm
you,
thinking about
if
it.
If you read between the lines of that voicemail, so what I said was, hi, I'm Jamie Jennings. I have 10 years radio experience. You know, I'm a horse person. Give me a call. And what you actually... what I was actually saying is, hi, it's really hot here and I hate my life and I'm tired of being sweaty and I'd like to sit down inside air conditioning and do a job and I'd like to get back to right. Okay, I'm dying. Call me back. That was actually what I was thinking while I was leaving that voicemail of like complete and, you know, just clear and concise and professional was inside. It was me screaming, please pick me.
I do have a ton of voicemails from July of that year. And I think that's about right. I have a ton that call came in on a couple of days in July. So those were probably the voicemails. Yours is probably in there somewhere.
I guarantee you those other 81 people don't listen to our show because they're still mad. I would be too. I wouldn't listen. Be like, screw that guy. He didn't hire me.
He didn't hire me. Now he's making fun of me.
Sorry. I never, just in case any of you are listening, I never win contests. I was due. It's my turn. Right,
it was your turn.
This is the longest radio job I've had consistently in my entire career, because in radio, it don't work like that. So,
and I think you were pretty convinced too when you announced, you were a little nervous to tell us you were pregnant. And I think you were pretty convinced we were going to say, okay, well, that's it after you have the baby.
Little did you know, it would provide
endless amounts of entertainment.
Which, by the way, he's currently screaming my name in the other room right now. But you know what? Let him find me. It's like a maze.
Well, Rosie said, just typed in and said, don't forget George Morris loves her and he loves no one.
Oh, this is true. This is true. So are we talking about George Morris?
Yes,
these days?
You can make that announcement right now.
Oh, my God. I have to interview him again later today.
George is going to be one of our first guests on Radiothon.
Yes, he is going to be one of the first guests. And I was like Googling George to try to kind of get some information. And it came up upon one of those, what is it called? The Chronicle forums.
Yes.
And somebody was like, has anybody ever put this jerk in his place? I can't believe people would listen to him. I think that what he says is rude. And everybody else was like, you're a loser. He's George Morris. Yeah. Okay. It was just so
you're
funny
to
read.
You're picking on God here.
Yeah. This is our Jesus. Okay. Back off. Sinner.
I'm going to be interested here because our theme this year is your fantasy ride, and you're allowed to pick any horse from history or current. So it's going to be interesting to see who George Morris says is his fantasy ride.
I can't wait. I get to talk to him because he was in Snowman as well. So I have to talk to him a little bit about that. We'll delve into things. And
well,
thank
I gotta
you
tell
for reminding
you
me that George loves
on.
Me, by the way, because I was getting nervous.
Before we go on, I just wanted to mention that yesterday after the show, Emily was on from the jumping show, and she had Lauren Howe on, or how do you say your last name?
Huff.
Thank you. Lauren Huff on. So that was a big get. But after the show, Emily did a little recording and gave us her fantasy ride. And I can't wait for you to hear it. You're going to be very proud.
All right.
And surprised, actually. And surprised. So let's, what we were going to start the show with before we got rudely interrupted with an anniversary was I wanted to thank Ruth McCormick for my Carrie Underwood Storyteller Tour poster. She sent it to me. I got it yesterday. It's hanging up right beside the auditors on my wall. So thank you to Ruth McCormick for sending my Carrie Underwood poster. I appreciate
Jennifer,
it.
Jennifer, how you feeling about that?
Oh, I'm fine with it. Makes his little face smile.
And you know what? It's half the size of my other Carrie Underwood poster that got lost in the last move, but I think Jennifer threw away because it was 3 feet tall.
Let me put up
it
my
was life size. That was a little creepy. Yeah.
Let me put up my air quotes and say it got lost in the move.
It did. It got lost in the move. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get the show started. Jennifer, what's coming up?
Coming up on today's, I'm pretty sure it's Wednesday edition, we're off to the frontier state, Alaska, and we're going to have a chat with horse gal and entrepreneur Jen Duchesne, and the velvet voice of Victoria Spicer has the European report at the end of the show, and filling in the bits in between, we've got news stories, questionable lists, and possibly something educational. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. Appreciate that. Well, my Daily Whinny goes out to Almandine, who won the 2016 Melbourne Cup yesterday. Now, let me just try and give you an indication of how big the Melbourne Cup is in Australia. The entire country closes down. Banks,
no.
Post offices, everything, businesses, it's a holiday.
Are you sure that wasn't because of El Dia de las Muertas?
No, this is a holiday where people go and get really wasted. I watched some of the footage from the Melbourne Cup. They had 100,000 people there yesterday. I watched some of the footage. Oh, my God. It makes the infield at the Preakness look silly. I mean, look like rank amateurs.
Did they do any of the jumping from porta potty to porta potty?
They were knocking the porta potties over.
Okay.
It was they were right. There was a lady riding the knocked over porta potty like a horse.
Oh my God!
So yeah, it was pretty wild. The Australians do know how to drink. That's for sure. It's a $6.2 million race. It's the richest. This is what makes it different than the than the Kentucky Derby or the other famous races around the world is that it's a handicap race. So really, it's open to almost any horse. Now, they must have had a field of like 40. It just seemed like there were 100 horses in that race, and I there might have been 40. I don't know the exact count, but it's a $6.2 million race. It's also the biggest sporting prize in all of Australia's sport. This is it. This is the biggest.
That's awesome.
It's crazy. And this horse was owned by Lloyd Williams, who's become the most successful owner of Melbourne Cup winners. This is his fifth horse that has won. The jockey, wow, whose name is Karen McAvoy, this is his second race. He won one in 2000 when he was a rookie. It was his first year as an apprentice. He rode a horse named Brew in the year 2001, and now he has come back all these years later and won his second race. It's also ranks as the most per person betting of losses of any track and any race in the world.
Which is why they can afford to make it a $6.2 million race.
the average Australian lost $1,130 this year on the race. Average.
Wow. That's amazing. And the horse's name is Almaden?
Almaden, yep. Almaden was the horse's name. So
and that's so cool.
It was neat. If you get a chance, maybe I can find it here. I'll put it up on our Horses in the Morning page. The race itself, if you watch the video, it's a 2-mile race. That's also what makes this different. It's a long race. And it's 2 miles. And at the end, when they were rounding that final turn for the home stretch, all the horses were right there. And then a couple of them broke away. And then it was a photo finish for the top two. So
do American horses ever ship over for it, or is it strictly Australian?
No, there were. So there was an Irish horse that came in second by the name of Heartbreak City, who almost caused the heartbreak. So the Irish horse was really close. I mean, it was a photo finish. It was nose to nose at the end, which was amazing when you saw all those horses. I mean, like 40 horses come around the turn and they're all right there. They were all in a pack. Nobody had broken out at that point. It was a really cool race. So if you get a chance, take a watch of it. It's really
I would love to. Yep. Yeah, that sounds awesome. Melbourne well, happy Cup. Melbourne Cup. Happy hangover day.
Yeah.
So you know how my favorite thing is that we finish a show on Monday or usually Friday, and breaking news happens, I don't know, as our show ends at 10:30 Eastern, and at 10:32, some news flash breaks. So last week, Nyquist had to work to prepare for the Breeders' Cup, and it was pretty subpar. And people were like, what is wrong with Nyquist? Well, he came up with some swelling in his ankle. And as announced after the show yesterday, on Monday, Nyquist has been retired. Hmm. That's right. Our Kentucky Derby winner is completely retired and has already, like that day, shipped out to Darley and Lexington. He's going to be at Darley's Jonabel Farm. And he is in some good company. Because now, not only did he retire and they announced it on Monday, he got in the trailer at like, that was 10:31. They announced it at 10:32. He was in the van, and at 10:35, he's at Jonabel going, hey, everybody, I'm here. It just seemed
to... Do you think they give him a week off before they start parading the ladies in?
Well, it's not breeding season yet. They probably pretty much don't start that till February. That's so true. He's got some time, and he's enjoying his time already, because Nyquist had his own Facebook page, and you know, it showed him rolling in the straw in his stall at Darley, and he was loving life. And then all of a sudden his Facebook page goes, hey, by the way, we don't own him anymore, so we're not posting. This page is over. Like,
bye.
Bye.
See you around.
It just happened so quick. I was just such a fan of this horse, and I loved watching everything. So he is not running in the Breeders' Cup Classic, as we initially thought. He was going to be running against California Chrome, and it was going to be so exciting.
Why is anybody running? Let's just let California Chrome stroll around the track, wave.
He's
going to
do it anyway. He's going to do that anyway. But he's, by the way, they announced he's the morning line favorite, going off at the huge odds of 1-1.
which means, for those that don't know betting, if you bet $2, you will win $2.
No, you don't win $2. You get your $2 back.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, you get your $2 back. Yeah.
So what you want to do is what I would do, which is what I would lose, is that I would box him with the longest odd horse, and then I would lose.
That's right.
But if I did win, I could make some money.
Well, you know what? If you want to be right up there with the Australians, you need to bet $1,130.
Got to make it count.
That's right.
So they did announce that the breeding fees and at Darley this year, he's in good company. Okay, so Animal Kingdom is there, Derby winner, $30,000 stud fee. Bernardini, who's like the still one of the leading sires, $100,000. He's there with Medaglia d'Oro, who's at $150,000. Oh. He's there with
he's
Kentucky
still at
Derby.
$150,000?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He is.
His babies must be winning some races.
Yeah, they are. And he's a former Breeders' Cup winner himself. And then you got another horse, Derby winner, in the name of Street Sense. So he's in good company. Street Sense is at $45,000. And the initial fee for Nyquist this year is $40,000. So not a bad start. Not American Pharoah, $190,000. But Nyquist, $40,000 for this year. So he's in good company, being with some pretty fancy. He actually, like, he's one of the he's cheap. Send him to Nyquist.
That's
he's
right.
Only 40 grand.
And that may go up depending on how his Prodigy do, too. So.
Well, they typically, they want to make it look, the kind of the thought process for naming stud fees is they want to make it look like the horse has value, but not overvalue him. Mm. Because what they don't want to do is in 3 years drop the price drastically.
Right.
So they want to introduce some nicer mares, so they keep it at a bigger number, but they don't go crazy with it. You know, $190,000 was quite fair for, you know, in that world for a Triple Crown winner. So American Pharoah, and it being from the lineage that he was from. So it's going to be interesting to see his babies on the ground. I'll miss you, Nyquist.
So now let me ask you a quick question. And I know we have other things to cover, but if California Chrome doesn't win the Breeders' Cup, comes in second, let's say, is he still in a running for Horse of the Year again this year?
Oh, gosh. There can be no question. Right now, he has like the highest amount of money ever won in a single year for a horse.
Yeah,
I don't see how anybody else could get it, especially since they basically got rid of the guy nobody liked, his old owner, the loudmouth guy. Boy, didn't he screw up?
Yeah.
Man, he'd have been
he
part of this.
He did.
I don't see how any other horse, and you would think, well, gosh, he's five. Why don't they retire him? Because there's the Pegasus, which is coming up in Florida next spring. And the Pegasus is a $10 million race. So I think that'll be his swan song. They're kind of aiming him to that one, and then they'll retire him.
Just take home the $10 million. That buys a lot of hay.
But it just goes to show you how much stronger these horses are at five than they are three.
Yes.
You know, he's just setting this example to run these horses later as opposed to cramming all these races in when they're two. It's ridiculous. And I know a lot of our listeners feel the same, and I'm not going to get too deep into it because I don't want to open that, you know, floodgate. But anyway, congratulations to Nyquist. You are going to enjoy the rest of your life. You worked hard for it.
That's right. He deserves it.
Yes.
And that was your daily Winnie?
Nyquist is my daily Winnie.
All right. Got it.
I know it's 24 minutes into the show.
I was just going to say, that's the longest daily Winnie we've ever done.
We had our anniversary chit chat.
That's true. I just thought that was funny. All right, let's do this. We have our horsewear winter grooming tip that we need to get to, and this one was interesting. So we'll play that for you, and then we're going to come back. We have our first guest, Jen, who's coming on from Arctic Horse Products, and this was a request of the auditors. They were talking about this company and these products, and they wanted us to get her on. So this is at their request that we're having her on the show, and what she has is pretty cool. And she's coming to us from Alaska. I want to talk to her about horses in Alaska, too, because that always fascinates me. We'll be right back. This winter grooming tip is brought to you by Horsewear Blankets. Joining us are two of the top grooms in the country, Eventer Philip Dutton's groom Emma Ford and Kat Hill from World Class Grooming. And this week's horsewear grooming tip is brought to you by Emma, and we're talking about winter bathing alternatives.
So no one wants to bathe their horse completely in the winter when it's a bit chilly. So here are a couple of tips you can do, especially after wetting out your horse and to get rid of those sweat marks. The first one, if they're quite sweaty, you can use just a mild detergent in a bucket of warm water. And if you add just like a couple capsules of baby oil, and then take a towel and thoroughly wipe them down using a circular motion all over and concentrating around any of the sweat mark areas. So saddle, girth, ears. A lot of people miss their head, where the headpiece lies and the brow band.
What are we talking about for detergent?
We actually like mild detergents such as Ivory.
Okay.
Any sort of mild antibacterial detergent you can use as well. Sort of a dishwasher detergent, basically. And then with the two combined, with baby oil and detergent, it basically gets rid of the sweat marks, but also leaves the coat a little bit moisturized without actually getting them really wet down to the skin. And then your second option, and I tend to do this on clipped horses that don't have a long coat, I use either witch hazel or rubbing alcohol to towel them off with once they've done their workout. Witch hazel, definitely for sensitive skin horses, it's much more mild on their skin than rubbing alcohol. If you feel your horse isn't clean enough to go on to lessons and you've got some whites, you can, rather than washing them, you could add baby powder to their legs so that you're a little bit whiter for your lesson.
And it is a hard thing. You never know. Is there a temperature that you go by where you don't bathe underneath a certain temperature with, like, do a full bath?
You know, when they come in, I just make a decision as, oh, they, you know, they'll dry off quickly if I just use rubbing alcohol or if I just use, you know, the detergent and baby oil. It's looking, you know, depends on, I'd say 45 degrees and below, you're definitely looking at just not giving them a full bath.
Where can people find out more about you?
We are on the internet at www.worldclassgrooming.com. We also have the book World Class Grooming for Competition Horses. And you can also go on Instagram, which is World Class Grooming.
I get all the books that come out, basically. We get them here to review. And most of them I send out to listeners. That one I kept. So World Class Grooming, it's on my shelf. World Class Grooming makes a great holiday gift as well. This tip was brought to you by Horsewear. Have you ever wanted to own your own Rambo? Well, here's your chance. From October 3rd to November 23rd, receive $50 off any Rambo turnout blanket, including the Rambo Duo, the Optimo, the Original, the Supreme, and all the others in the Rambo turnout line. All you have to do is trade in your old turnout from any brand for a horse in need. Simply visit horsewear.com/trade for more information and fill out the form for the voucher you will need to get your $50 off. The complete list of retailers is at horsewear.com/trade as well. Open to U.S. and Canadian residents only. Go to horsewear.com/trade today and replace that blanket with all the holes for one of the best blankets on the market, the Rambo Turnout Line. And we appreciate Horsewear support of Horses in the Morning and the Horse Radio Network, and we hope that you're finding those tips useful. So, Jamie, you want to go to our guest?
Absolutely, I do. This is something that our auditors pointed out, and everybody has wanted to hear more about Arctic horse gear. And we have Jen Duchesne on the phone to talk about her Arctic horse products. These are revolutionary. It's a revolutionary all-weather riding skirt. Now, I am not the skirt-wearing type, so I've got to learn more. So we say good morning to Jen. Hey, Jen.
Hey, good morning from Alaska.
I cannot believe, number one, that you are up this early in the morning. I mean, I'm on the West Coast. It's 6:30 for me. What time is it for you?
It's 5:30 here. But, you know, if you live in Alaska, you're used to getting up early to do business with the rest of the United States.
Ah, good point. So it is, let's see, it is probably getting pretty dark there.
Yeah, it's very dark now. It's not getting light till about 9 o'clock in the morning, and the sun's going down. I don't know, by 6 or 7, and pretty soon that will be even The sun will be coming up at around 10 or 10:30 and going back down around 4:30.
How do you do that?
Tanning bed.
How do you not get totally depressed and want to curl up in a ball?
Well, I have a cozy log house. That helps. And, well, I grew up in Vermont. So, you know, it's not terribly different. You know, maybe 2 hours total less of daylight, even in the dead of winter in Vermont. So I guess I'm a bit used to it. And it doesn't last for that long. It doesn't last. That's only for about a month that it's really like that where I am. Now, if I was in northern Alaska, the sun wouldn't even come up.
I think
I'm in
that
South
when
Central.
Okay, see, I went to Alaska, and I was kind of more north, and I went in July, the beginning of July. So it was just light. I mean, it's a weird thing to kind of take your body into that. And I think it got dark for maybe 2 hours. And I think that was the only 2 hours I slept every day because it was like, I'm up, let's do stuff. It's light out.
Oh, I know. It's so funny. My first year I lived here, it was like, oh, I'd get up early, go to work. And I'm a wildlife biologist, so I'd work all day doing wildlife stuff. I'd come home and go horseback riding and then go kayaking and it'd be 11 o'clock at night and it would still be daylight. I would fit 3 days into one day and I was exhausted the whole year until I realized I can't really do that. I have to sleep even though it's light out.
Yeah, you have to make yourself go to bed. So talk to us. This has got to be practical for somebody who rides horses, which we are going to get into on what horse life is like in Alaska. But tell us about the all-weather riding skirt, because what I think is when I hear skirt that I'm some prairie woman who has to sit astride side saddle on my horse because I've got to keep my, you know, ankles covered while I'm out riding. Now, what is the riding skirt? Tell me about it.
Oh, that's so funny. A lot of women think that at first. So these riding skirts really evolved because I just found in the really cold temperatures here, we were wrapping blankets around ourselves to stay warm on the horse. Whatever we had on underneath there, it wasn't warm enough. And so it just, we had like baling twine get-ups with loop through blankets. It wasn't safe. And it wasn't pretty, but it was a lot warmer than what we had. And so I just thought if we had something that would hold itself together like a skirt, we'd be really all set. And then if you could throw in some technical fabrics like waterproof and really good insulation and the ability to wash it, that was really the genesis for the whole thing. And you wear them over your riding pants or your jeans. You don't have to worry about any kind of thigh chapping.
Well, I was like, underneath. I'm going to straddle this horse with my panties up against the saddle.
No, please don't. That will involve a lot of pain for you. No, you put them on over. And we made them about, you know, they all have custom lengths. And so they come down to about the top of your ankle bone because I didn't want women having to be dealing with holding up their skirts to work or ride around horses. I mean, these things are meant to be really, really, really easy. And I've got women who are writing to me every day telling me how much they love them because they're out working with their horses and they forget that they're on because they're just so comfortable. They're out of the way. They really move with you. And women are using them to mush dogs. Sports moms are really into them. Of course, people who drive horses and the riders have been really, really positive about these. But I didn't know how they'd go over, honestly, when I first started dreaming them up and mocking up some styles because they're not mainstream equestrian clothing anymore. And a lot of women say the same thing that you said, which is, I don't wear skirts. And I would say to that, believe me, I'm not a skirt girl either. I actually just wrote a whole blog post about this. I'm not a skirt person, but I'm a horse person. And when I realized how much more time I could spend with my horses, because I had these skirts on, I was warm and dry. You know, that's the kind of math I'm good at. I'd wear anything to keep me out with my horses.
Well, the other thing, too, I think is, you know, for the horse's benefit, the way these skirts are designed and the way I see the pictures is that you're putting them over the rump of the horse so they actually become a quarter sheet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even...
Exactly.
I mean,
we have that full style.
Yeah, they're skirts, but the picture that I'm looking at right now, it's like a quarter sheet blanket that you get to wear around your waist. I mean, it's just very practical and it makes a lot of sense. Now, you are actually really helping a lot of people with your skirts. I mean, it's obviously it's a small one owner chick business, you know, woman owned business in Alaska, but a portion of the proceeds mm-hmm. goes to an animal nonprofit of your choice. They are, tell us about kind of how your company runs, because, okay, go ahead. Sorry, 3-year old. So you employ local people, you use American made product. Tell us about kind of your business model.
Yeah. So I really wanted these skirts to be good, not just for getting women out with their horses, but I wanted them to help the Alaska economy, help our American economy, and really bring back customer service and durability and quality. So we're very small. It's me and I have 4 seamstresses right now, really great ladies. And I'm paying them a great wage to make these skirts. And we do source American-made materials whenever we can. Most of our products are made in America. Most of our materials that we use, we hand make all the skirts here in Alaska. And then everybody who buys a skirt, they get a chance to, they can put in a little box at checkout where they want their portion of the proceeds to be sent. So they can decide how they want to spend their skirts donation. We also do partnerships with nonprofits, and if the nonprofit wants to be able to generate money for their organization through selling articles, they could put out social media posts, things like that, and we form a more of a formal partnership with them, and they get even a larger portion of the proceeds. And so any skirt that they sell through their referral, they get a portion of that. So it's a way for these organizations, which, you know, for the most part are continuously trying to find funding to help themselves do their good work. They can partner with Arctic Horse to do that. So I would say if anyone's listening, you're welcome to email me if you're part of a nonprofit and would like to learn more about that partnership that we offer.
Oh, I think one of the things that's cool too is you have a multitude of, you have a variety of the skirts. You have the Backcountry Trail, which I assume is a little tougher, but a little lighter weight. You also have the Insulated, which where you live is a really wonderful thing, and waterproof riding skirts. So they really do serve a practical purpose as well as they kind of look cool. And what Jamie doesn't remember, because she's not old enough, is that back in the day when I first met my wife and everybody was going to horse shows, all the women wore lightweight skirts over their white breeches. These lightweight wrap-on skirts right. over their white breeches to keep their breeches clean before they rode their horse. And then immediately when they got off, they'd put these lightweight skirts back on. It was kind of a thing and became a fashion thing back then.
I remember that, Glenn. I just have always opted to wear pajama pants over my breeches. Still do.
So you're still a little younger to remember the day when everybody wore the skirts. That was kind of a thing. It was a style back then just to keep your white breeches clean. So these serve that purpose, too, as well as keeping you and the horse warm.
That's a good idea. You just pull it off right before the show ring,
right.
and then you freeze your butt off, and then you put it right back on as soon as you get off.
And the cool thing about that is, even when you're warming up the horse is wearing a quarter sheet, basically, with some of the styles. So, you know, depending on where you live, like up freaking Alaska.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, when we were first starting to kind of, by we, I mean me and my horse girlfriends, when I was pitching this idea to them and getting their input, what are the different scenarios that you need protection? And, you know, women were talking about the reason that you wear chaps, you know, if you're going through a lot of heavy brush, things like that, you need that really tough material. And so that's how the backcountry skirt was born. And for me, I'm 5'1" and chaps have always been a problem. You have to get them. I have to have them custom made. And then if I gain weight and they're hard to put on, and I love chaps, but these skirts are so easy because you just wrap them around you like a towel and zip them down. I mean, it's that easy. You can put them on and take them off while you're mounted if you want to. And that Backcountry Trail skirt, a woman named Samantha, her ride is called the Nevada Discovery Ride. She just completed an 1,100-mile ride on her Mustang to raise awareness for Mustang adoption. And she didn't bring chaps. She brought our skirt. And when she got back, she wrote us the most fabulous review, and she called it essential trail riding gear for a serious rider.
We had her on our show when she was in her first week. Yeah, we had her on our show when she was in her first week, and I think she's coming back on Karen's endurance episode here shortly to talk about the ride. So I'll ask her about it.
Well, all right. So you know her.
Yeah.
And then the other skirts are you know, women who don't live in really cold climates, they needed waterproof protection. So the rain skirts, they're really popular in the Pacific Northwest. And then, of course, insulated. And we have this wool skirt that is just really beautiful, too. I wanted, speaking of pajama pants versus maybe one of our skirts, how about you tell you a couple of other quick things there? That's true. Well, one of the great things about, especially the insulated skirts, well, they all do this, but like I said, you just put them around you, zip them down. So with snow pants or anything else you want to put over to protect yourself, you have to take off your shoes, put on your pants, put your shoes back on. Then if you want to take them off to go in the shower ring or whatever, you've got to do the same in reverse. We also have mounting snaps on all of our skirts. So when you go to get on the horse, at the bottom of your skirt, there's a little snap. You pick it up and you snap it up to your hip, and that keeps the skirt up and open so you can have a hands-free mounting. So they're just so easy to use. We put a lot of thought into women not having to deal with the skirt aspect of wearing a skirt.
Okay. So you don't have to hike it up and flap it around. It just snaps right up there. You get on, you just unsnap it.
Exactly.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so cool. Now, before we run out of time, I've got to ask you, what is horse management like up in Alaska?
You know, we have three horses on our property, and they live outside. We have an open air barn, so they're not closed in. You know, our coldest temperature is here about negative 20, negative 25. And of course, we'll blanket if they need it. But they're on continuous hay. And I think the biggest part of keeping them healthy is keeping them with a continuous food source and also keeping them dry. So once they get rained on, and I talk about this with the skirts too, the reason that the skirts work is that they capture your body heat and all that insulation. That's why you stay warm. And for a horse's coat, it's the same thing. They get this long winter coat on, and it's not that their coat itself keeps them warm. It's that their coat traps all this air. So the air captures the body heat, and it makes the horse, this cocoon of warmth around the horse. So when it rains, or let's say if it snowed forever, and it collapsed down all those air pockets, that's when you're going to potentially have that hypothermic situation. So if we try and keep them dry, and we keep their furnace burning by giving them hay all the time.
Gotcha. So dry and eating, and get that internal. It's basically like when you feed them in the cold, you're just throwing coal in that fire and keeping that fire exactly. Burning.
What about hay? How expensive is that
exactly
up there?
Right.
I want to know how expensive hay is in Alaska.
Yep. You're such a husband.
Oh, man.
I am.
You know, it's so a square bale, you've got a good deal if you can buy a square bale, 60-pound, 50-pound bale for about $12. We've got some really high quality hay. We buy a round bale, 700-pound round bale is $150.
Yeah, that's up there.
It's expensive. Yeah. Hay is expensive in Alaska. And I don't know, so, you know, Northwest, I've seen high costs in the Northwest, too, with hay similarly priced. But some people are paying $15 a bale up here, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's $15 a bale here, but I'm getting 100 to 120 pounds. So it's a little bit different. But yeah, I mean, that sounds like California prices too, you know, honestly. Oh, it's just brutal.
Yeah.
Just brutal. But, and you got to do it. You got to feed them. You got to pay that to keep them healthy and happy.
Do you ride in the winter? Do you go out in the dead of winter when there's a lot of snow on the ground?
I will, yeah. We have a really hardcore group of women up here who ride in all kinds of weather. You know, assuming that it's okay for the horse, really. If it's too icy or if it's icy, we don't go out. And also, you know, if the temperatures are below zero, we really worry about the horse's lungs sucking in that really cold air. So maybe we could ride, but we don't, because we're just worried about the impact it would have on the respiratory system.
I guess it's not like you're preparing for the next upcoming show, you know, for the weekend when it's like, you know, light for 2 hours and negative 20. Probably don't have to worry about conditioning for anything. Now, is covered arenas, are covered arenas or indoor arenas at all practical up there? I mean, popular? They'd be very practical. But.
Yeah, for sure. We have a few. We don't have a ton. It's definitely not like the lower 48. We've got, you know, I don't know, maybe a handful of them. So I live about an hour north of Anchorage. Yeah, we just have a handful, so it's a high prize to have access to an indoor. But most of the women here that I know and ride with, I would say the majority of women, they're not riding in an indoor most of the time. They're riding outside. And of course, all their horse tours are outside too. So even if you can't ride because it's negative 25, you still need to go out and care for your horses. And that's another big reason you need to be warm.
Well, you guys can find these products at arctichorsegear.com. And being that I live in Phoenix in the desert, I would like you to create some sort of umbrella sunshade one that I can wear to make my own covered arena, because I don't have one either. But anyway, arctichorsegear.com. Go in and check them out, because I know we have so many listeners that are in Michigan and Vermont and New Jersey. Maine and all at Seattle,
the Dakotas.
Area,
we have a lot of listeners in the Dakotas too, which which sounds worse than Alaska, actually.
I mean, I can't rip on the Dakotas because I already got in trouble last time I did. So, bless their hearts that they live up there and they need these as well. And you guys, when you do buy them, a lot goes back to the community. A lot goes back to, I mean, you use 100% recycled packaging materials. Little things like that are what capture my attention, is that you employ local people. You use, whenever possible, American-made materials. You use recycled packaging materials. Dear God, if I get another freaking packing peanut in the mail, I'm going to lose my mind. So, thank you.
Now, I will bring this up, and it is something that I'm sure you've had to address, is the price. Because they are a little more expensive than people probably first think, and I'm sure you've had this question 1,000 times. So, how do you answer that?
Yeah, so thing is, if you're buying really high quality materials and you're paying someone a living wage, the cost of what you're making is going to be much higher. And now that I do this, I see things that are made, you know, foreign that are hundreds of dollars. And I think, I have no idea why they're priced that high if you're paying someone 30 cents an hour to make that thing. If you're paying someone $25 an hour and it's taking them 4 or 5 hours to make something, then you're putting in the price of materials. You know, really, some of our stuff is even $25 a yard wholesale, and we're using over 3 yards. So some of these skirts cost over $200, $250 to make. So I know the price tag is high, but it's not because we're walking away with these huge bags of money. It's because they cost so much to make. When you're really paying people, craftsmen, to make things, you need to expect to pay for that. And then anytime there's ever an issue, I'm here. And if you could call, you're going to get somebody, you're going to get a response and really good customer service. So it's going to last you. I totally feel everyone. It's expensive, but it's worth it. You're going to have it for years.
To me, I didn't think they were that expensive, because you're looking at, let's say, the Arctic insulated long riding skirt, full size, full length, is $289. And people pay $289 for a pair of breeches, you know, that don't have any of that purpose. And this is to insulate you. You want to pay for good material.
I think there's a lot of material. You know, if you look at kilts, men's kilts even go that high because of the amount of material in them as well. If you get the good quality ones, they're that high as well, which you probably are using about as much material. So,
I mean, dear God, idiots pay that much for a pair of shoes, you know, not even practical shoes, high heels even.
Well, that was a good answer, though. That was a good answer. Yeah. A very good answer.
Well, it's,
I think it's a real answer. So
she's right. Yeah.
It's always easier that way.
Because they're high quality and it costs a lot of money to make. And I take care of my employees and I give back to the community. How about that?
Good answers. Yeah. And she lives in freaking Alaska. It's cold up there. And you have to pay for heat. So
ArcticHorseGear.com. Congratulations on getting your little baby up and running. And it's very successful. And you're having a lot of, you're just having a lot of well-deserved success from it. And congratulations. I love to see I'm an empowered woman taking care of stuff. And next time I talk to you, I want to talk to you about your job, because that sounds like the most amazing thing ever.
Oh yeah, it's super fun. It's been so nice talking. Thank you for calling me and putting Arctic Horse out there to a broader audience.
Hey, it was our listeners that brought it to us. So I think it's already out there. I think they brought it to us. So
good.
Well, thanks, Jen. Take care. And have a nice warm
winter. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
Hang in there, girl. I hope so. Thank you.
Okay. Hang in there, girl. You can do it.
Boy, I mentioned that. I was like, oh, I hope so.
Yeah. I have friends that have had to live in Fairbanks because there's an Air Force base up in Fairbanks. Yeah, yeah. And some people, when they get that assignment, are super excited, mostly the men, because the men, they fly all the time and it's beautiful and they leave a lot. So they travel a lot because they can't fly.
I imagine the scenery up there must be incredible.
And the women hate their life. So most of them end up getting depressed because they can't go outside, and most of them end up having a baby. So you really can't go outside because you can't take a little baby outside and there's nothing else to do but make babies up there. So they have babies and then they have to sit under lighting, like happy lights to make them happy.
Oh, the sun-like lights or whatever they're called. Yeah.
Vitamin D or whatever. Yeah. I don't know what they're called. But yeah, so it's a hard life up there. It sounds like she's a little further south, which is nice for her. But still, my gosh, that's tough living right there.
We watch Coast Guard Alaska occasionally. And I must say, every time I watch it, I go, why do people live there? Just don't get it.
Well, she was a wildlife person. I mean, my gosh, what a cool place to work if that's your field. So, I mean, I guess you can't.
There's people like Lisa Kelly, the ice road trucker girl who I was chatting with again last week on Facebook, and she loves it there. I mean, because she's not known anything else. So, you know, she loves it there. She thinks it's a great place to live. So, you know, I guess it all depends on your perspective, right? I mean, you probably would like a little bit cooler, and you're going to get that when you move to Oklahoma. You're going to get a little bit cooler than Phoenix for sure.
Okay. Just so you know, this morning, our temperature finally broke and I went outside in the dark to kind of check on everything. And I was shivering, like teeth chattering, shivering, like, and I'm like, oh my God, it's so cold. It was 59 degrees.
Oh, it was
like, that's really cold.
Yeah. It was
okay.
For
but
you,
it's
that's really chilly.
For me, I was like dying. And this is like the high for most people, you know, this time of year. I'm like, I can't handle it. So, the wussification of myself has happened when I moved to Arizona. So I think when we relocate someday to Oklahoma, it's going to definitely be a challenge. I mean, I'm from Georgia and then I lived in Arizona. I had a brief stint in Ohio, but I moved because I was freezing to death. So I've spent some time in Kentucky.
Will be more moderate than Kentucky, probably.
Yeah. 3 years in Kentucky, I was like, this is terrible. I hate it.
Yeah, which is
it
the reason we left. We thought we were going warmer. We did go warmer from Massachusetts to Kentucky, but it was still not warm enough. Well, let's do this. We are going to hear from last week. I tried and didn't have the sound file and really screwed it up. We tried to give you, and this was a listener request too, they wanted to hear the emergency preparedness interview that we did a couple of years ago with Dr. Jimenez from the Technical Large Animal Emergency Rescue, or TLAR. And she used to be on the show. She used to do shows with us. And Christy West was on, who was from thehorse.com then.
Before she went and became a professional skydiver.
I watched her video the other day. I don't know if you watched it, but I watched her video the other day of the skydives they did to win some kind of championship. Oh my God, they are crazy.
Oh. I mean, anybody who jumps out of a plane willingly is crazy.
It's beautiful. I mean, they did this thing where they had a wedding and a divorce all in one day in a number of skydives, and they had a honeymoon, and they were doing patterns and stuff. It was very cool, and you could tell exactly story they were telling. It was
somebody
cool.
had a honeymoon? Did they show, like,
No,
sex
they did not.
In the
well,
air.
No, not quite all the way. No, but it was not a Game of Thrones. But
they
it
did
was,
not consummate the marriage in the midair.
The
as
divorce was funny because they were arguing. It was like 10 skydivers and doing the formations and everything. And then they were arguing. And then they kind of all, you know, when divorces, half the friends go with one and half goes with the other. Well, that's what happened. They were all arguing and then they split up and they went off a party from each other, and that was the end. It was very cool. So anyway, Christy West, who was with thehorse.com back then, helped with this interview. So take a listen, and we're going to learn a little bit about emergency preparedness coming into winter time. We're going to be back. We have some lists for you and some other stuff to do yet on the show as well.
Good morning. I'm actually down doing my military duty this week in Miami, Florida, so I don't understand what's the problem.
So, Rebecca, Rebecca, can you start out by telling us what you a little bit about yourself? Because you're doing military stuff right now, but you're very busy doing lots of different things.
Yes, ma'am. I'm the president of Technical Large Animal Emergency Rescue.org, and for almost 20 years, we've been doing teaching to emergency responders, firefighters, veterinarians that get involved with disasters and emergencies, proper tactics, procedures, and techniques to try to help large animals in various distressful situations, everything from getting caught in flooding to overturned in a trailer wreck to entrapped by a wildfire or barn fire. So trying to get that kind of good information out to 911 emergency responders.
So you're the one when there's a horse running down the street that hopefully has trained the sheriff who is running after it, or not running
Correct.
After it,
and
if you've been trained properly.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully they're not running after it, but yeah, those are the kinds of things that we try to teach them, because what a lot of people don't understand, because we're horse people, is that especially in urban areas, many emergency responders do not have a horse background, and everything that they know about horses and cattle is via what they've watched on TV. And as we know, most things on TV are entertainment. They're not educational. And unfortunately, that contributes to lots of problems.
And you're a PhD. What is your PhD in?
It is in animal physiology.
Okay. So let's start out with the weather. What kind of weather can affect horses and horse owners? You know, right now it's winter.
Yeah, the way that I usually try to explain these things is that wind, precipitation, heat, and cold, and it really comes down to everybody likes a little bit of wind and maybe a little bit of precipitation once in a while, and we sort of like it when it's warm and we like it when it's cool, but we don't like when things go too high or too low for any of those kinds of things. So tornadoes and hurricanes and flooding and drought are not usually something that most people enjoy, and neither do our horses.
And you know, right now we are worried in parts of the country about cold weather and snowstorms and all the things associated with that. But what kind of things are we worried about during the summer and maybe the spring and fall? And I think you've mentioned them a little bit already.
Yeah, what was really funny is I always tell people that actually horses are very much better prepared to deal with cold than we are, since we are essentially naked, and they are not. And they usually have, if they're well taken care of, they usually have a nice layer of fat. But you're right. I mean, down here in Miami this week, it's 84 degrees, and it gets down to the low of like 79 or 80 at night. So, you know, you bring a horse from up north down here for the racing season, you know, it's got an adjustment period. So adjustment periods are something, since we have such a highly motile society with our horses, for showing, breeding, et cetera, we have to think about what is the effect can be on the horse when we take them to a new environment. And then obviously, in situations of extreme weather, how we're going to take care of that animal and better prepare them or protect them from the situation that they're in. That might be as simple as providing shade if it's too hot. It may be providing some insulation from the wind if it's too windy. But then, of course, when you start getting into an extreme weather, people are forced to make very difficult decisions on, here's a hurricane, am I going to evacuate or am I going to try to shelter in place? If you're going to shelter in place, what kind of facilities is the horse in? How high is the wind going to pick up? Is it going to be high enough that my poorly built pole barn is going to fall down on my horses, or is it a very well-built concrete barn with hurricane strapping? Those kinds of decisions are difficult for horse owners to make and probably going to be different in every single part of the country.
And now you're mentioning some secondary things like barns falling down. What other issues can weather cause that aren't maybe the storm but are the follow-up to the storm that you have to deal with as a horse owner?
Exactly. Just like in Hurricane Katrina, you know, the wind probably is not what killed a lot of horses. What killed them was the flooding that was afterwards. It may be as simple as flooding in your pastures may do a couple things. Obviously, lots of erosion, which is going to be a long-term effect, and from the perspective of environmental care of your property, that's something to think about, maybe even limiting your horse's access to wet property. But in some cases, it gets bad enough, particularly in flat areas such as Florida. You may have 3 inches of water. The horses don't have anything to eat, so you have to change your strategy as to what you're going to be feeding your horses. Maybe they're normally on grass, but now there's no access to the grass. Maybe there's, in some cases, like after hurricanes, there's too much salt in the water that floods into your property, and you don't want them to drink that water because it may lead to imbalances in their electrolytes, etc. So just as something as simple as lack of access to grazing, and then how you're going to mitigate that with hay or some other foodstuff. Inability to water your animals. Just, you know, in the case of a drought, you may lose. I have, what's funny is in the last week and a half in Georgia, where I normally live, we've gone from being in a serious drought situation over a week and a half to now approaching a flood stage. And up till 2 weeks ago, many of my friends in the area of Georgia that I live in were reporting dry wells. If you are dependent upon a dry well and don't have any other resource for water for your horses, obviously that goes from being something that we just sort of, you know, no big deal, we always have water around, we sort of take it for granted, to, oh my goodness, I've got a serious concern here. And it's not like you can, if you don't have the facilities to deal with that, what are you going to be doing? Hauling 5-gallon buckets of water from your next door neighbor? Are you going to be filling a 50-gallon agricultural tank in the back of your truck? What is your plan? And really, that's what we do a lot in disaster preparedness, is trying to get people to have a plan, to think through, how much water am I going to need, time, 10 gallons per day per horse, how many times do I have to transport water? It's simple math, but it can be pretty scary when you start talking about people that have 6, 8, 10, 12 horses times 10 or 20 gallons a day per water, et cetera. That's just a good example of how frustrating that can be.
Yeah, it's a lot of water. And in our area, our storms during the summer, we have thunderstorms that are followed by wildfires. So that's another threat that we sometimes face when
Absolutely.
Weather rolls in. And really
Absolutely.
Scary, too. Not thinking about that too much this time of year, although you probably would recommend that people start thinking about it now.
Of course. That's what we actually, since you brought that up, FEMA has done some studies over the last 10, 15 years, realizing that the messages that we were putting out to the public in general, and this is for human as well as for animal disasters, they started realizing that most people hear blah, 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 and they think it's the same old, same old. They don't realize that it can happen to you, too. So having ostrich syndrome and saying, well, that'll never happen to me because I live in Kentucky, you know, I'm never affected by hurricanes, it can happen to you. And it's as simple as losing power. What are you going to do for your pump? It's as simple as providing water, the basics of things that your animals need. I always try to use the example of a lady that called us one time off of the horse.com blog that we do, and she said, you know, we have 100 horses in our boarding facility, and we lost power, and that's 1,000 gallons per day. Where do you get 1,000 gallons of water? And what they did was they called the local fire department, which was very gracious about sending out a fire truck, but that's one fire truck. And so the scale, when we start talking, this is not puppies and kittens, when we start talking mm-hmm. about logistics for large animals, it's large.
Significant. Now, you just recently did a blog post about hypothermia in horses, and I wanted to ask, you know, why is hypothermia a concern, and when is it a concern for our horses?
As I said before, and if you talk to your veterinarian, you'll find out most horses are very capable of dealing with cold, except under the situations of their coat being extremely wet and in a high wind environment and not being able to provide them a sufficient nutrition. Normally, their gut provides a lot of heat from the inside, and most horses in good body condition score of from a 4.5 up to, unfortunately, a 9, have plenty of fat to be able to provide insulation. But when they get trapped in a situation, and of course, unfortunately, in some situations with people, the way they maintain their horses, the horse can't get out of the wind, or the horse is soaking wet and can't get out of the situation it's in, and at some point, it's not able to keep up with its body temperature regulation. Of course, from our perspective, we normally think of that for a horse that gets trapped in the mud, or is down for some reason due to sickness, et cetera, and they lose their body temperature because the environment's pulling it out of them faster than they can actually produce it from the inside. So that's when we particularly see that, and we talk about hypothermia being something that you need to consider if an animal ends up in one of those situations. For example, falls in a goes through surface ice and ends up in your pond and can't get out by itself, or falls down in mud, even in relatively warm temperatures. Cold water will pull the body heat out of the horse faster than it can reproduce it itself. So that's something that we always try to get people to remember. You know, yes, it stood up and it ate some hay, but it probably needs to see a veterinarian to be treated in case of hypothermia.
So what mistakes do you commonly see horse owners making when it comes to dealing with extreme weather?
Well, I already mentioned the ostrich syndrome, so I won't harp on that one. But the consideration of, let's just take one example. People ask a lot about tornadoes, particularly this time of year. In fact, almost exactly 1 year ago, we had a spate of tornadoes going through the United States. So I'll mention that. We've done a couple blogs on that. Making that hard decision, do you leave them in or do you take them out? And sort of that depends upon your facilities. If you have a facility that has been engineered for higher wind events, i.e. a concrete block with hurricane strapping or heavy-duty strapping, that facility may be more appropriate to leave the animals in. But the average pole barn, the average lower quality or wooden structures probably aren't going to stand up to much more than a very low wind event, and so we normally recommend that you put the animals out. However, if you're putting them out in a half-acre paddock together and they have nowhere to go, then that makes it very difficult to make that decision. If you've got a 200-acre pasture where the animals can make the decision to hide themselves, essentially, they'll be fine. One of the things that we forget all the time is that animals have instincts that help them for millions of years to protect themselves. And one of them is they turn their butt cheeks into the wind. Their butt cheeks are muscular, they're large, and they can absorb what may look like horrific injuries into those butt muscles much better than they can if they were turned the other way around with their heart and their chest exposed. So they sort of take care of themselves. And those kinds of injuries can usually be treated by a veterinarian relatively easily. It's difficult to treat the injuries that occur when a barn collapses in a high wind event. Although, again, it's difficult to say, is that an EF3 tornado headed towards my barn or an EF5? You know, hopefully you're not standing there trying to make that decision. And the other thing I always try to remind people is, as much as we love our horses, your family is more important. It is more important to make sure that you've got a safe place for you and your family to hide or protect yourselves, interior room, well-structured room in a facility, than it is to be concerned about your horses, as sad as they may sound.
So is there any one thing that you would recommend that if you do nothing else that you do this one thing to protect your horses in case of weather?
Buy a NOAA weather radio, one that is battery backup, so that you know what's going on. That is the gift that I give new friends when I meet them and they have horses and, you know, a birthday or Christmas rolls around. That's the thing that I buy for somewhere between $15 and $35, depending on the quality of the radio you want. You can get that. Put it in your barn. Put one in your house. And it will automatically go off when you are impacted locally. You can also, obviously, get the ones on your smartphones and that kind of stuff. But a NOAA weather radio is the thing that's going to help you, when the power goes out, still know what's going on around you.
Well, that was from a previous show we did, and we wanted to thank Jennifer for putting that together with Dr. Jimenez and Christy West of thehorse.com. We hope
you forget how the audio was back then.
Yeah. You know, that was probably a better day, too, actually.
Yeah, it was.
Hey, let's do a commercial, not for anything traditional, but for your trailer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my husband and I had to make a tough decision. And that tough decision is we are selling our living quarters trailer for many reasons. But the main reason is I'm just not using it enough to warrant having that expensive of a piece of equipment.
It's like 80 feet long. I mean,
so big.
It takes up half. When we pulled into your house, all we could see was horse trailer.
I know. And it's really exciting to park the way we have to do it in our driveway. But it's a 2014 Bison. It's a 8310. And it is a 3-horse slant load living quarters, a 10-foot living quarters. And it has a 6-foot slide out that is the dinette. So basically, you walk in the trailer and there's a dining room in front of you. To the right is your bed. To the left is the stove. I have spent a lot of time in this. This is where I've stayed every time I've gone to Monty's. I've lived in this living quarter trailer. So, I mean, I've spent weeks at a time in this thing and been super comfortable. We bought this one initially because we had a normal little small living quarters trailer. And it sounded like such a snob. Oh, it wasn't big enough. But we had a kid and it just wasn't enough room. It was like with Chad, Lucas, and I all trying to kind of position ourselves in there. It only had a couch. And so what we did was we bought the bigger one. And it's just, sadly, it's just not getting used enough. So I had to make the tough decision, and finances for us this, you know, first couple years of an airline pilot husband is not where we would like it to be to keep up with all my competing, because competing is, you know, you're looking at a $600 to $700 weekend minimum. And that's if the place is close, you know. So a lot of the reason that people have living quarters trailers here in Arizona is because all the competitions are in California, or and so you spend days at a time in your trailer. So it was very practical when I was competing a lot. But with finances the way they are, I'm not competing in other states very much.
You had another trailer too, right? You have another trailer.
I have a little 2-horse bumper pull that's about a million years old. It's very soon to be a really bad ad, but it still works. It functions. The floor's good, so I use it. And so that's kind of what I'll be carrying around. Now, when I sell this, I'm going to get a slant load that's just like a normal dressing room, and I can sell the 2-horse and sell this one and be a little more financially available. But it's priced at $37,500.
That was new. Do you remember?
Yeah, we bought it brand new and had it shipped here from, I think, Oregon. And we bought it kind of sight unseen, but we bought it from the company. So it still has warranties and everything. And
it's a one owner, only driven by grandmother to church on Sundays.
Exactly. Grandmother Jamie has not exceeded 55 miles an hour.
Matter of fact, that's probably generous because it really hasn't been driven all that much at all. So
yeah, it's gone to California and back. And it also, you know, when you're driving to California and back up to Monty's, I realized too that there's no place to stop and get gas in Los Angeles. So,
not with that thing.
So, yeah, we are selling it. And so,
to find out more, just email jamie@horseradionetwork.com.
Yes, jamie@horseradionetwork.com. If you're like, hey, I want a really fancy, nice, long living quarters trailer, and there's nothing wrong with it.
Owner, low mileage, original title. So, that's good. Yeah.
Delta is paid for.
And I will add, to embarrass Jamie a little bit, is I saw the pictures you posted. And let me tell you, when I saw the living quarters, it was not that clean. So she has spent hours cleaning that out.
Yeah,
it's
thanks,
now
Chad.
Clean.
And my mother-in-law being in town, she helped.
That's a real
reason. Nah, we didn't keep it messy, but it definitely has. It's actually posted on, if you're looking for used horse trailers, horsetrailerworld.com is a place that you can go and look at a lot of used horse trailers. So we'll eventually go and buy a 3 or 4 horse slant load just with a dressing room. Because I've got 4 horses and I've got kids that want to go to horse shows that are local, and it's just easier to just pack that up and go and not be, you know, you don't go to a local horse show, and I have, and I feel like a total jerk, like go pulling up at a local horse show with a giant living quarters trailer going to like a hunter show. But I'm sad to have to sell it, but it's just, I had to be sensible.
Well, now, let's also talk seriously for a minute about, and I've been contacted by at least 10 people now asking if we were going to cover the whole situation with the Native American Indians that's going on right now that's being totally ignored by the press because all they can talk about is Trump and Hillary. So you did a little research into it, and actually Eventing Nation posted something about that. So fill us in.
Well, Eventing Nation posted that there was a thing going on Facebook where they were asking people to check in to Sacred Stone Camp on Facebook to show support for the Native Americans who are peacefully protesting the construction of the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline. And it became personal when many of the protesters are on horseback and they're firing, you know, rubber bullets and air cannons and all sorts of stuff, and a horse was killed. And now it's uber personal to the horse world because they're injuring and hurting and killing horses. So just to give you a little bit of a rundown of what it is, kind of the Dakota Access Pipeline is a pipeline that is going to be built by Texas-based Energy Transfer Partners, ETP. And it is designed to transport about 570,000 barrels of crude oil daily from North Dakota to Illinois. And the problem is that this is going to affect a lot. Apparently, you know, fracking is causing massive problems. There was just two earthquakes in Oklahoma due to fracking. And that's not a place where you get earthquakes. Tornadoes maybe, but not earthquakes. But it's a $4 billion project, and it was proposed in 2014, and they wanted to complete it this year. Well, the Sioux Indians and Native Americans in the area are all protesting it because the pipeline would travel underneath the Missouri River, and that is the primary drinking water source for the Standing Rock Sioux. It's about a tribe of about 10,000. They have a reservation in the central part of North and South Dakota. Builders of the pipeline insist that they have taken extraordinary measures to safeguard against disaster, but opponents are pointing out that...
But the pipeline that just broke, a couple of weeks ago, didn't help them at all.
No. The opponents are pointing out that even the safest pipelines can leak. So the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, there's so much government in our world, has reported more than 3,300 incidents of leaks and ruptures at oil and gas pipelines just since 2010. Okay, that's 6 years, 3,300 incidents of leaks. So the smallest spill could damage and affect the tribe's water supply. That's people's water, for crying out loud. So they are arguing that it also traverses a sacred burial ground. And while the land being used for the pipeline is not on the reservation, tribal leaders are arguing that the federal government did not adequately engage the Standing Rock Sioux during the permitting process, which is a requirement under federal law. So,
yeah, because they have treaties for those reservations that go back 150 years.
You know? I mean, hey, indigenous people, we're going to put you in North Dakota. Like, seriously, like, you didn't screw them. They were living where everybody wants to live, and now they're stuck in North and South Dakota. Not that there's anything wrong with North and South Dakota.
We don't want emails.
But so much of the oil produced in North Dakota, there's just a lot of oil. And so, you know, all these big wig government types are like, hey, let's take that and let's use it. Well, they don't care about people. They don't care about the people that are.
And what's been happening is the private security and the local sheriff there have been getting a little more violent than is being advertised to in the mainstream media.
Yeah,
and it's been getting out of hand. And actually, the tribes and now Native Americans or Indians, a lot of them prefer to be called Indians, have traveled from across the country, and it's become the largest gathering in the history of the Native populations. So they're all there to support them. They threw it down in a letter to Obama, who apparently had visited there last year and was all, you know, holding the babies and saying how wonderful this reservation was and everything. And he's been very silent on this whole thing until yesterday. And he did come out yesterday in an interview with Now This. I don't know what that is, but a TV show, I guess. And he addressed concerns of the Native Americans that the pipeline cuts too close to tribal lands, and that he did say, we're monitoring this closely. My view is that there is a way for us to accommodate sacred lands of Native Americans, and I think right now the Army Corps of Engineers is examining whether there are ways to reroute this pipeline.
They're arresting people. They are hundreds. Using
and
rubber bullets,
one
pepper
person
spray.
Came through, and I think it was anonymous. One person came through and bailed them all out. Put up all the money to bail them all out.
Oh, I didn't hear that. That's awesome. But there's actors. Like Shailene Woodley, an actress, is getting involved. I know that Mark Ruffalo actually just sent a bunch of. Okay. I know that Mark Ruffalo, the actor, actually just sent up like power sources for the people to remain comfortable that are there, the solar power panels and everything to make everybody comfortable. There's so many supporters like those two.
And the reason we are covering this is there are horses involved.
It got personal when you start killing horses, yeah, okay? It's ridiculous.
They've been using rubber bullets, which did not go well on a couple of the horses. So, you know, or the people for that matter. But it actually killed a couple of the horses. And that's why. And this is a tribe that lives, you know, this tribe, particular tribe, rides horses from the time they're born. So these are horse people. And it was interesting, it was sad seeing them chasing one particular tribe member on horseback with four-wheel drives trying to catch him. And he ended up escaping and going back home because the horse was more... the horse could get away easier than the four-wheel drives could in that terrain. So, it's not that we've been ignoring it, but it was just that, we wanted to get the story straight and read it. And now what are they doing? You can actually donate for the benefit of the tribes and the horses, right?
Yes, you can. And we can post that link. There's a official Standing Rock Sioux Tribe donation fund that is for the Dakota Access Pipeline. So you can check that out. We'll post the link to that on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page. But basically, they need help and money. And
what they got caught in, this would have been this would have been front page news for the last 2 months on every network out there, except the election that's going on. And it's Trump and Hillary. It's gotten buried because of that.
It gets buried because this is not something that people want to touch, because it is not something that is glamorous, and it is not something that is exciting, and it is not something that sounds like a reality show. You know, I mean, honestly, and the problem is that there's so much oil money. Like Donald Trump owns part of this oil, you know, he's got stock in this oil company, and Hillary Clinton is strangely silent on all of it too. So it's not like anybody that is in a position to be elected wants to even talk about it, because you know that people get money from different places, and oil money is one of those things that kind of goes in with the BLM. In my mind, it's like they're cattle ranchers, and you know, there's just too many ties everywhere to everybody and everything, and nobody wants to touch it. So they're asking for donations basically to help and stand with Standing Rock is the call for support. So you can check that out. We'll post a link to that, but it's on Eventing Nation as well in the news and notes sections from yesterday.
Our listeners just posted, and I don't know if she wants to post her name, so she just posted that she thanked you for talking about it, and that she has friends there that got arrested the other day.
Oh my gosh. I have a lot of Mustang friends that are involved in it, because they are, you know, a lot of the wild horses are in these areas as well. And just people need to help other people and protect other people and stand up for those who can't stand up for themselves. And the people of the Sioux tribe and what we have done as a human race to the indigenous people of the United States is unforgivable. And this is just one little place where you can go in and you can help. You know, I get so mad.
All right. Good. Thank you for covering that. Let's end on a positive note. I got to tell you that the Queen and Prince Philip, I hope, one, that I live to 90, and two, that I look like them at 90. And three, that I'm as active as them at 90.
You won't be.
The Queen just was out riding again the other day. They had pictures of her on her beautiful black felt pony. I always wanted to have, that's on my bucket list. That felt pony is so cute. It's the one she always rides. Her name is Emma. And she was out riding the other day, and it was cold. She had her winter coat on. She was all bundled up with her scarf and everything. She still doesn't wear a helmet, but I don't think we're ever going to get
the She's the queen, for God's sake. Yeah. She's 91.
I don't think she's going to be wearing a helmet. But then yesterday, Prince Philip was out driving his four in hand and at Windsor Park. So he was out there still driving his four in hand horses around Windsor Park. And he looks terrific. He's 95, Prince Philip, now. So, you know, he's still out there driving. Now, the grooms look very cold and miserable on that carriage, but he's having fun. So it was neat to see them out and about and doing their thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other positive thing is, ladies and gentlemen, the official announcement, 2017 Rolex tickets went on sale yesterday.
Yeah, did you? Well, and so did the tailgating spots.
So 2017 Rolex tickets went on sale yesterday, November 1st at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And so just to remind you, you need to get your tickets. And Glenn was going to get a tailgate spot. Did you get the tailgate spot?
Karen from Kentucky Performance Products was helping us with that.
Okay. Karen was involved. Good, good, good.
And
love it.
The website to get the tailgate spots kept crashing all morning. By the time she got through, they were gone. It was that pop. Last year, her tailgate spot 2 days later after it opened. This year, the website Jennifer tried to get in, it was down. Leslie managed to get one a little later on because she was also trying to get in. The website was down. So we ended up without a tailgate spot. So we're all going to crash Leslie's party. That's what I'm going to say. We'll just crash Leslie's party.
So no tailgate spots.
No, they were sold out.
Now, I'm pretty sure that if the websites were down and then all the spots were sold, that the people at the Dakota Access Pipeline who are trying to frack the oil are the ones who bought it, right?
I don't know, but it's become hugely popular. They're $500 a piece, and they sold out in a matter of an hour or two. Now, they also have something this year. You're going to laugh your ass off. They have something this year, Jennifer found. You can go glamping. Do you know what glamping is?
Glamorous camping, baby. I've got a trailer for sale. Take you glamping.
Well, there you go. Well, you can go glamping at the Rolex. It'll get you all four days access tickets. It will put you right at the campground, at the edge of the campground, toward where the cross country course is, and you'll be able to do it right there. And they're calling it glamping. And guess what you get for $1,800.
No.
You never. Get a tent. No power, no toilets. You get a tent.
They provide you a tent.
Now, in my book, they really need to look up what glamping is again, because if I'm going glamping and spending $1,800, I want a bathroom, I want a nice mattress, I want breakfast
hotel.
Every morning served to me. Yes.
And a hotel.
Yeah, $1,800 to go glamping, and they were very clear. No power, no way to charge your phone, nothing.
Oh, wow. That sounds really exciting.
I don't think they were lined up for hours on the website yesterday to book the glamping.
Nah, probably didn't sell out.
They're probably still available.
Wow. Well, that sounds exciting. Yeah. Well, anyway, so Rolex tickets are on sale, and you can...
And there's a lot of our listeners going. We are going to do a meetup of some sort there. Karen still wants to do a meetup with Kentucky Performance Products as well. So we'll figure something. We'll get it done. Well, that's it for today. Tomorrow, we have our Draft Horse episode, which last month was our number two episode. Again, that's 2 months in a row. So
was number one?
The 5,000th episode party.
Oh, okay.
But obviously, was our number one last month. But it's we're looking forward to that tomorrow. They have a whole bunch of guests lined up for tomorrow's show. They always do. It's always a busy day. And then Friday's really bad ads. So get your ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Jennifer, she's not on, I don't think. So I think we picked the winner this week, too, of who won last month's prize. So get your ads in. Don't forget, if you record them yourself, you get double the entries for the prize. So we love when you record them yourself. How'd it go last week with Wendy? Did you have some fun ads?
It was pretty much the best one of the entire year because it was windy and I. Yeah.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much. Don't forget to get the app, iOS or Android. Just go to Horse Radio Network, download it there, and you can find all the past episodes, all 1,500 on our anniversary, all 1,500 of them on the website at Horses in the Morning.
Y'all got some catching up to do.
Yeah. Okay. Chop, chop. All right. We'll see you.
It's Ben Neutergeld, everybody. Bye.
This is the play point where I'm supposed to play the closing music, isn't it? 1,500 episodes, I still don't have it right.
I'll sing.
I think I'd be ready for that at the end of the show.